Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Hello, Steve. Are you there? Are you done pooping? Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Ooh, you sound better.
Excellent. Yes, I have acquired a different headset for this purpose.
Yeah, it's you don't quite sound as a 1980s audio on tape sounding.
Well, I'm sure everyone will be disappointed with the improvement in quality, but they'll just have to make do.
It's not 100% perfect, but you do sound better. You sound more zoomy as opposed to the best of Billy Joel on cassette that I used to play in my mom's 88 Cutlass.
Heart attack,
you ought to know by now.
I'm moving out. Billy Joel's the worst.
I mean, Billy Joel's great.
I am not a Billy Joel fan, although I do like that one song, the We Didn't Start the Fire. That song's good.
Well, that's one of those songs that with my own children, like whenever it comes on, like when we're listening to it in the car or something, and it like We Didn't Start the Fire comes on, I always have to turn around and go, you guys don't understand, like, that in the early 90s, when this song came out, everybody in America collectively lost their minds over this song. Like, it's true. It was the greatest thing ever. I think when that song came out, We Didn't Start the Fire.
Wasn't it like 89 or something?
Might have been 89. I think it was 90. Yeah, 89. 89. I was going to say it was either 89 or 90. But people lost their collective shit over it.
As well they should. That song is
that song is fucking boomer porn. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It's just like the updated version of The Day the Music Died, which is another song that I absolutely hate.
It's just a bunch of nonsense words.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I should say American Pie. Don McLean's American Pie. It's talking about how the boomers are this great generation of people and how everything revolves. Like, the day the music died was when three musicians who were okay died in a plane crash.
Well, like, no, not that one. I was talking about Billy Joel's song is a bunch of nonsense words.
No, it's not. It's real.
It's just a bunch of gobbledygook. Just like what's the other one? REM.
That's great. It starts with N. Or
yes.
Birds and snakes and aeroplanes.
Yes.
Bruce is not afraid.
Yeah.
I am a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn worlds at its own knees. Time to serve your own heat. Speed it up.
No
street. No letter. Start to clatter with fear. Fight down height. Wire in the fire represents the seven games and a government for hire at a combat site. Matthew was a coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck.
Keep my quarters of a trunk
in the key. That low plane. Fine. Then, overflow. You gotta do to save yourself. Serve yourself. It's so many. It's time to serve your own needs. Speed it up and knock. Speed the grunt. No, let us.
Wow, that was pretty impressive.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
And I feel fine.
Wait, here, you do that part. You do the, it's the end of the world.
Can
you do
that? It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Fine. I feel fine. Well, what's the part that everybody loves in that one?
I think everyone just likes the beginning.
No, it's the part where
See, to me, those, like, all those songs, like, they kind of just blend together in a bunch of nonsense where it's just like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well, We Didn't Start the Fire is like Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe. You know,
right? Like, it's just words.
But it's like he groups the words into specific time periods, at least. So at least, you know, you're talking about, like, oh, the 1950s now. So oh, why, now he's going into the 60s.
So why is We Didn't Start the Fire boomer porn?
We Didn't Start the Fire is totally boomer porn.
No, I'm saying like, but why? Like, it's just
because it's like member berries for boomers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's just like, oh yes, we didn't start the fire. It goes all the way back to our parents' generation. It has nothing to do with us, you know, because that's what it's all about. It's like all boomers just passing off like, oh no, all of this terrible stuff that's totally our fault is not our fault. It's actually the fault of our parents.
Boomers passing the buck? I don't believe it.
Yeah. And it's like, boomers have never, like, I always, you know, when kids I'm teaching would talk about like boomers and stuff like that, I'm like, you guys don't understand that in the 1980s, when boomers were like, you know, peak 30s, like when they were the generation that was like up and coming, they were called the me generation.
Yeah, because they are the me. They are still the me generation. They managed to pull a fast one and try and make Gen X called the me generation, but it's actually the boomers.
It's like, why won't Gen X accept that they're the me generation and Gen X is just like, meh.
The one thing that apparently literally every generation agrees on is the boomers fucking suck.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest generation hates the boomers. Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, everyone hates the boomers. The boomers are literally the worst. Well, they should all die.
You go up to Zoomers and you're just like, so what do you think about boomers? And they're just like, fuh. And you're like,
no,
what? And
it's no, like, they're flossing.
They're flossing. I always say, like, I'm sure we have maybe some Zoomers who listen to this, but I always talk about like my daughter who's a little young. I don't think she's quite a Zoomer.
The oldest Zoomer is 25. Really? The youngest millennial is 26. The oldest Zoomer is 25.
Oh, the oldest Zoomer is 25.
Yes. Yeah,
I was going to say, like, most Zoomer kids, like my daughter is probably too young to technically be a Zoomer, but like watching her and then being working in a school, I tend to know how like Zoomer humor is fascinatingly weird and funny to me, because like, yeah, they'll walk up to each other and they'll like touch pinkies and say Shazoo, and like that's the funniest thing that they've ever seen in their lives. Like,
yes, and H is really good.
Yeah, it's just like I don't get it, but I appreciate it.
Just type H. That's it. That's like they just type the letter H, and it's just like the funniest thing.
Yeah, I guess I you know.
I like it. I dig it. They're that surrealist, like the weird, the really weird experimental like Adult Swim shorts that never caught on.
Yeah.
Well, somehow that planted and became that's Zoomer humor. Absolutely.
Hemingway, Eichmann, Stranger in a Strange Land, Dylan, Berlin, Brea, Pigs and Bacon.
It's too many words. It's too many words, too fast.
Malcolm X, British politician, sex, JFK, blown away. What else do I have to say?
We didn't start the fire. It was always burning.
End of the World as We Know It, I think is better just because it's more abstract in what it's saying. So sure. It's, you know, and even Michael Stipe doesn't even remember the words of that song. So,
well, there you go. You're better than the band.
Well, Billy Joel doesn't remember the words, so We Didn't Start the Fire anyway. But I think that's because he's an alcoholic. So we should feel a little sad.
Can Billy Joel remember anything? I mean, there's Piano Man. He's got Piano Man.
It's 5 o'clock on a Saturday. The usual crowd rolls in. There's an old man sitting next to me, making love to his tonic and gin.
Swing us a web, you're the Spider-Man. Swing us a web.
He says, Steve, can you play me a melody? Not really sure how it goes, but it's sad and it's sweet, and I knew it complete back when I wore a younger man's clothes.
Da, 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 da,
yeah, I know all the great karaoke songs.
Karaoke king over here.
It's true. I haven't done karaoke in a long. I did karaoke before the pandemic. That was the last time I did karaoke.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. I was playing Disco Elysium, and there was just a big karaoke scene, and it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, we were. I tried to do Queen, Don't Stop Me Now, because I know all the lyrics to it.
Oh, that song's hard to sing.
It's not really that hard to sing, But it's, I mean, like, anything Freddie Mercury is hard to sing. You got to put your own spin on it because you can't, like, steal Freddie Mercury. Like, his right. range is too crazy.
Yeah, his thing, his, like, wow, like yeah, that, like, yeah. whatever the fuck that is.
Oh, there's no stopping me.
I like Radio Gaga a lot.
Sky, yeah.
All I hear is Radio Gaga.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem was that the lyrics didn't show up on the TV, so I didn't know when to come in.
Ah, shit.
Yeah, so it kind of sucked. But anyway, tonight I'm gonna have
a real good time.
I feel alive. And if we haven't turned off our entire audience from our nine a.m. singing session.
Yes, the 9 a.m. karaoke with Joe and Steve. Welcome to the karaoke cast.
Karaoke cast. Today, Joe is going to do gang. Today's Joe's going to do Gin and Juice by Snoop Dogg.
Fantastic.
Steve, with so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop Dio double G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit nearly every single day.
The boys in the hood are always hard. Come talking that trash and we'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't test me, boy. I ain't said shit.
All right.
You really got to play Disco Elysium, though. I'm not gonna lie. Like, how often do I recommend you a video game?
I mean, not often, but like I've told you, I'm not like I literally have nothing in my house right now, and I won't be able to do shit until probably September.
Well, then when September rolls around, you should play Disco Elysium.
Yeah, we were just a house update. My house is pretty much empty right now. I'm like sitting at my desk right now with my computer stuff all set up. Nothing else is in my house. It's literally just like my bed and my desk at this point, and a TV. I am not moving until June 9th. So it's like I'm pretty much empty there. We did put our house up for sale. The house sold in one day, over asking price. This market is fucking insane.
Yeah, it's like I said, we've discussed before. It's almost like it's a problem.
It's a problem that, you know, you could trace back to the pandemic, but, you know, you can't build a house without wood, and there's no one cutting down any wood in Canada because Canada actually has COVID restrictions. So.
Damn.
Yeah. No one wanted to go.
Must be a weird feeling.
Yeah, well, it kind of is. And the thing, I mean, I'm no Jim Cramer here. telling you when to buy, when to sell, but from everything I'm reading, it's like nothing is going to be fixed for like 3 to 5 years.
I think that's generous.
I mean it might be a little generous, but the, you know, unless there's some major something that changes, there's no one's going to be able to, the housing is not going to match demand for 3 years, and even then you can't make any money off new housing unless you're charging $500,000 to $600,000 for it, just because of the cost of materials. So it's fucking insane right now. So people, don't buy houses like I did. There's literally nothing you could do at this point, unless you want to go out. I take that back. Is that you can actually afford a decent priced house in the middle of fucking nowhere. But if you want to buy a house that's actually in a metropolitan area, good fucking luck on that one.
Middle of nowhere does sound appealing.
Yeah, until you get there and you realize that everybody there has Let's Go Brandon flags out on their front porch.
Oh, I'm at the real middle of nowhere where the everybody doesn't exist.
I mean, there is that possibility.
You're talking about Bumble Scum. I'm not talking about Bumble Scum.
Yeah,
and the majority of the United States is Bumble Scum.
I was gonna say, like, where are you living? Where the majority of the United States is not Bumble Scum?
Yeah, no. There's an important distinction. Bumble Scum is far more prevalent than the actual middle of nowhere. But the actual middle of nowhere is like, you know, an isolationist. Like you're like the nearest person is like 3 hours drive away, kind of thing. So, that's what I was referring to when I say the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's like it's going to be hard to find that. And even then, it's like
wilderness, living in a bus in the woods, middle of nowhere.
I've seen the wickedness. I'm just thinking of what was that movie with that Into the Wild, where that idiot, yeah, where the idiot rich kid decided to go out into a bus and died.
Oh yeah, no, that he was just like I'm gonna go wander around.
Yeah, which was great until he realized that it's like, oh, I don't know anything, and he died.
Yeah, yeah. Turns out, people who can go live on their own have skills to do that. You need skills to go live on your own.
You also need like 100% self-reliance. Like you can't just
right
decide.
You can't just walk in to the woods completely untrained and be like, no, I'll be fine. I read a book once.
Yeah, those people are awful.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
All right. Let's talk some gaming stuff. I mean, I don't have a ton of gaming stuff to talk about currently. For multiple reasons. One, I have been crazy busy the last few weeks with all of my moving. And the other thing is just that it's like not a super ton of big news. I did want to put an addendum on that. The Gates of Antares is not technically going away. Like, it's not like it's folding up and you're not going to be able to buy anything anymore. It's just that right now, nothing new is going to be made for the game.
So what you're saying is that we are now beyond the Gates of Antares.
Is it? I guess you could say that. I would say that beyond the Gates of Antares means that there's so much more that has gone beyond the Gates of Antares.
So maybe we're before beyond the Gates of Antares.
That could very well be. I'm not 100% on that one. So we'll check that out. Maybe. we'll see. Of course, we're getting to that slow zone of releases. It's getting to the summer after GW drops Horus Heresy as their big summer release. It should go up for pre-order probably next weekend. We're hitting into the summer doldrums where like nothing gets previewed until Origins or Gen Con. And Gen Con's Gen Con's the same time this year.
Well, yeah, because they gotta drop all the summer stuff that they spoiled, like that's already been revealed. So like the GHB, I think the new Daughters of Cain and the ghosts.
Nighthawk. Oh, the ghosts! Yes, it's the ghosts. It's not the tree people.
Yeah, they have the really cool boatman. That, yes. Like, he's on the giant boat. That model looks fucking sick.
Yeah, that's just the new two player starter that they're dropping.
It looks really good. So
I don't know if I've ever seen a two player starter for AOS that I've been like, oh fuck, I really like. Or actually, I don't think I've ever seen a two player starter for either like AOS or 40K that I've been like, oh, I really like that. And by starter, I mean like just a two player, box set that they've been putting out, not the actual starters.
The last ones that I saw where I thought both factions were appealing were definitely, I mean, Battle for Skull Pass, Blood Island, the Skaven versus the Elves was really cool.
Yeah, no, but those are actual starters, like the Dark Elves and Ghosts.
Oh, you're just saying like the these random like,
yeah, like introductory ones.
Faction box set. Right. I actually really like the small ones. The ones that are like they're really small. Like they're always connected to the starter for the most part, but yeah. Like they're like the really like cut down ones. I think those are really cool. Like if I actually wanted to get someone into Warhammer, like if I was like, running a store or whatever, I would shill those way more than I would shill like the full size starter.
Yeah.
Because like I think they're cooler. They make more sense to me as like as a player, they make more sense. Like, and then like as a seller, they make more sense because there's a lot less to do in them, and you'll get the full range of like what the hobby is, because you don't need the full contents of that starter set to like play Warhammer and like understand if you're gonna like the game or not. You need a smaller one, so like the one that's got like the one character, like three spearmen or one of the like super hammer guys, and it's just like, and then like a couple of the orcs and like a monster, like, yeah, that's fine. Like, yeah, to get that with a buddy.
Well, and it's like, and the sad thing is in that no one ever really talks about it is that it's like you don't Like if I ever got into an army in Age of Sigmar or was getting someone into Age of Sigmar, those Stark collecting boxes or those two player boxes where it's like the Daughters of Cain and the ghosts, I would say, no, don't buy any of those. Generally because the stuff that they put in those is always fucking useless in the game.
Sometimes they're good. There was actually I mean, it's going to be totally out of date now, but there were a few places that were doing they actually had like a tier list of like what Stark collecting boxes are like good. They had like
they still do those.
Yeah, where it's like it has all the Stark collecting boxes and it's like this is S tier. You'll use everything in the Stark collecting box in an actual army. And then like the later ones are like, or then like as they go down, it's like as they go down in the tier list, it's like less and less of what you'll use in actual army. So like the Fire Slayers one is really good because the Fire Slayers one is just like it's the most common horde troop which you're going to use, and then the big ass dragon. So it's like it's in that one. I think if I remember correctly, I think that was one of the best ones like in the entire range. So like, yeah, this one's a no-brainer. Like you will use this starter set in any list you play. Like you will use this.
Yeah, I think actually the one that they just did, the Vanguard Fire Slayers, it's got like 20 berserkers. So you're getting like two boxes of berserkers and five of the guys that have the flails, and then the one character, which is, I think that's close to the original box set, because I think it's like if you took 10 of the Slayers out and you'd put the Magma Droth in there. Now,
right.
That used to be great because the Magma Droth, you'd want like three Magma Droths in your army for them. So if you bought three of those sets, you'd get 30 dudes and three Magma Droths, and that was right. Perfect.
You'd have an army.
Yeah, that was exactly what you wanted. But I'm not 100% sure on Fire Slayers now. I've been, I think all my AOS stuff is put on pause. I don't know if I want to invest anymore in it until I see Old World. When Old World drops, which is still probably a couple years off, but I want to see, do I want to do Sigmar or do I want to do Old World? Like, I think I'm going to make a siding line on that. Because I miss my square bases. I'm just going to be honest.
I really want to see how Old World pans out. Like it could end up being a game I'm very interested in or a game that turns me off immediately. Cause there's been so many versions of Warhammer Fantasy. It could very easily fall one way or the other. There's no way for me to, yeah, say for sure.
It's literally a crap shoot in that you're probably gonna shoot and get crap.
Who knows? I would say that, except they've been really good on the fantasy side in terms of like keeping things like for example, like right now, like the game, like we've mentioned before, like, I mean, I haven't actively been playing, but I follow like the tournament lists and like the overall like strategy, like in the, what armies are doing well, so on and so forth, and like they're well aware that they kind of broke their game by making the monsters way too good. It's more of a weird condition than I think I might even be repeating myself, but it's a stranger condition than normal when it comes to Warhammer, because like perfect example, the Stormcast. The new Stormcast stuff, like the Spearmen, the Vanquishers, they're all good. Like they're good models. Like they are not weak. They're like a strong choice. You're like, oh man, these are good. But the dragons are so insane.
Well, of course they're insane. They're the brand new model that's cost $100. So you have to buy them.
No. What I'm saying is the other new stuff is still good, but the dragons are insane. And then all the armies that have monsters are insane. So you have a weirder situation than normal, where like normally you'd look at it like an old Warhammer book and you'd be like, half these units are shit, like just dog shit. Like half these units suck. These units are okay, and then these are good. The Age of Sigmar, a lot of the armies seem to be in a case where like you have a book that has a bunch of good stuff in it. So like this is kind of weird. Like everything's good. And these things are insane. So but mostly it's just because they're monsters. Because you look at like the one of the best performing armies, just overall, not winning, but just performing. Like it is like the ultimate. Like you will not get washed at a tournament. Is the Giants?
Yeah.
The Giants are not, their Giants aren't winning any tournaments, but the Giants are like this, like almost like a gatekeeper list where it's just like, you will not, like you will not, like if you, if there's, if it's a 5-round tournament and you bring like goblins, say, you're probably going to go 0-5, maybe 1-4. Like you're going to get your ass handed to you. Like for the most part, just, that's just the way it is. The Giants, it's like, that's nigh impossible. Like you're probably going to go 4-1 or 3-2 just by default to bring the Giants. That's how powerful the monster rules are now. So they're aware of that. So they're actually doing something in the General's Handbook to make goons and battle line better by not, but not actually nerfing the war scrolls of the monsters, which that's the part that is new and interesting. Cause normally when they, when something was busted in Age of Sigmar, they would just like do the General's Handbook and then fuck it over with points. You know, they'd just be like, yeah, this thing's too good. It's just too many points now. So now you now don't use it. Like it's like, yeah, this thing that was good, that was 200 points and like you took 5. Well, now it's 350 points. So now you take 0. So that was the old balancing style. So they're doing something different this time, which I am interested to see, because trying to actually balance like the game rather than just, you know, point shuffling to make things playable or not is a newer approach to their game that they have not done before, as far as I know.
Yeah. And actually I even heard a rumor recently that said that Age of Sigmar may start going all digital. Like they're not going to be putting out any new books or like General's Compendium. Like it's going to go straight digital with all of their rules, which I, on one hand, I feel like with a competitive game, that's actually a pretty good idea, because it will, you could constantly just update through an app as opposed to, or, you know, wherever you're doing it digitally, or as opposed to errata and everything else after you print out a book. Also, it'd probably save you a shit ton on printing costs. But on the other hand, as a bookshelf enthusiast who likes to have all my stuff out on my bookshelves, I'm kind of like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. I enjoy looking at my collection of books kind of like you know, like an ancient librarian does, like, you seek the 1985 Rogue Trader book. And I pull it out gently and I say, this is a holy tome that contains all this information. And here's the one section that you're specifically looking for.
I think that's not a terrible idea. And it does open the opportunity for them to make boutique books though, like so immediately what I think of, because you know how like they already do the like collector's edition versions of
which are useless, but yeah, go ahead.
Right, they're just collector's editions, they're whatever. But what this sounds like to me is you could do like, you know, as like a from the Games Workshop side, they can just be like, yep, we're going digital to everything, but we will still be releasing physical copies in limited print run collector's editions only. Like, there you go. Like if you want to have it on your shelf, you can buy the limited edition collector's print run, but expect the book to change, you know, and then like, you know, caveat being, we're going to keep updating these rules. So your book will not be valid shortly. But here you can have it for your shelf. That would be my guess.
I mean, that would be the one that makes the most amount of sense to me.
Yeah, that would be my guess, because then they would keep it for people who really want the hard copies. Because I mean, honestly, like I have the books, I haven't looked at them. I've gotten all of the rules just from the app.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the books constantly. The interesting, I think, would be a smarter move, in all honesty, for print cost saving, is get rid of the hardcovers and go back to thinner softcover books, like you had in the 2000s. 90s and 2000s, and that way you could keep costs down.
Books. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, I understand that. Yeah. Okay, how do I put this? So $50 for the hardcover rulebook for your specific army is fine, except for the fact that, let's say you play Stormcast, right? Stormcast at this point, have you played Age of Sigmar since it started less than 8 years ago, you will have bought 4 hardcover copies of the Stormcast rulebook at this point.
Right.
You know, it was 2014 when it started, right? When Age of Sigmar came out.
That sounds right. Yeah. Yeah.
So like that's 8 years ago. Every 2 years, you have to spend $50 on a new hardcover book. Not terrible when you're a grown up. However, it's like, That's an awful lot of updates on a hardcover book. If it was $20 on a softcover book, I think people would be more willing to actually buy more books, hence making more money. Now, we've talked about this before numerous times. Does Games Workshop ever look at... you think that there is someone at Games Workshop who has two columns and they decide between the two, okay, we will make the most amount of money doing X as opposed to Y. However, I personally do not think that happens because I don't think that Games Workshop has any business sense whatsoever. They succeed despite their decisions.
I propose a compromise.
Yes.
Here's my compromise with you. I think that they are doing what I said, but to your point, they're using the wrong information to make those decisions.
Okay, I could possibly see that. Like, yes, they're going like, oh, we're going to make more money this way and we'll be real chuffed up blokes. But yeah, they're looking at like some crayons that are scribbled on a napkin that was done in the pub while watching the newest match between Arsenal and Manchester U. You know, it's
you said soccer teams. I did say
that soccer team. I hope the British people don't get upset that we're saying soccer and not football.
Football. It's not football. It's football. Football. If you're going to say football, it's football.
Football. Yeah. Yeah. But yes. So back to that point. Yeah. I don't think that there's actually any sort of data that's backing up that hardcovers are going to make them more money than softcovers. Especially because I think probably most players are either getting their rules digitally like you do, or else they're just downloading them from free sites.
You also could do, I mean, the other thing too, is they could make them, they could approach it in more of a supplementary, style where you kind of do like the middle of the road. So like,
to the end of the road,
not the end, the middle of the road. So I release the Stormcast book. Like this is the third edition. So here we go. I got it. Basically you change the design idea, like they've already changed the design idea a bunch of times for Sigmar in mostly positive ways, I might add. But so you change the design thing. Every army gets a book as fast as possible. Like you shift the idea of how you're doing books, and every single army gets their third edition book as fast as fucking possible.
Well, so they're definitely doing that.
So you don't tie, well, I mean, even faster than what they're doing now, because you don't even tie new releases into the books. Like, so basically, like, so let's just, for the sake of argument, let's say fourth edition is coming next month. Fourth edition is coming. So here's what's going to happen. Fourth edition is going to release. I'm releasing the new core book for fourth edition, the two starter armies, whatever. Then there's going to be every month, like three armies worth of books with no models, and maybe more. Maybe I don't know what their production looks like, but maybe even more books than that. Whatever they can like max out. Like, you know, if there's 12 armies in the game, there's gonna be six books released the month after third edition, and there's gonna be six books released the month after that. So every army will have its new book 2 months after the third edition drops. So every army has its new updated. These are the rules. Then, after everything's updated, then you release what you said, smaller soft covers that don't have the fluff, that don't have background. The smaller soft covers have any war scrolls that need to be changed, any new stuff. So like when you're like, oh, and you know, this is the Night Haunt supplement, you know, Night Haunt supplement one, and this one has the new like ghosts with crossbows and the dude with the boat, plus any rules changes. So more of a like, and you hit like your it's more books, but it's more books, but it's less volume, because you know it's like, and I'm talking like maybe even like one of those small like staple bound thin covers, like not even like a, you know, if it's not enough information for like a full like soft bound back book, you know, like you remember like the older like D&D supplements, which were like you know, staple bound. Yeah. They were like super small. Yeah. Those like that. Yeah. So you do something like that, except you do it for Warhammer. So when you have new models, new whatever, you put them into those small little like very inexpensive supplements, and then those come at the rate and the wave of new model releases. So then you drip feed the new stuff, or you drip feed the actual new stuff, and you can put your balance changes in there as well. So like right now, what you could do is like, you know, the Stormcast Dragons are shitting on everything, and they could be like, well, maybe we actually do need to tone these down, both on their war scroll and in points. So when Stormcast Supplement 1 comes out, it has the new dragons things, and like literally just has like above it, like these replace the war scrolls in the Stormcast Eternals book. And then all of that also happens just automatically digitally.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of, instead of perhaps not tying, like, okay, so how does this sound as an idea? You put out a book for Stormcast for second edition or for third edition of AOS. The book literally contains no rules. It's all fluff.
Hobby
please, stuff. Hobby. Beautiful photography. You put it on a soft cover for $20, right? Then you have all the rules on the digital app or something similar. So that way you keep them two separate. You put on a nice thing, and so that way you can, like, people can have all of those books.
Oh, I like that. The stuff that's not going to change is in a physical book, and the stuff that is going to change is digital.
Exactly.
That's smart. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sucks because, like, for example, I really like the fact that I can go back. I have a complete 6th edition collection. I could play all of my fantasy 6th edition stuff, you know, if I wanted to, and I don't have to worry about downloading anything or finding the files or whatever have you from back in the day. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's something to it, maybe with modern gaming, when you're doing it that way. My only issue is that I really hate looking at rules on my phone. It's just fucking terrible. I'd still have to go and print out the rules to look at them because I'm an old man. Anyway, so we got to restart the Zoom again. So okay. If we go, we're going to be like, let's go to commercial, Steve. What would you say to our audience?
Hang on, I'm getting something dust. Oh my God, they hit the fucking Pentagon! Recording is in progress.
We're back.
A dinosaur story.
I said that last time.
Yeah, and I said it this time.
Man, did you try and do it before I did? Is that the whole point?
Yeah, see? I beat you to it.
Sorry, that took a little... Well, our audience won't know. It'll be instantaneous, but for us, that was like a minute or two because I was having
You could always insert a bunch of dead air in there just to make it awkward for them.
Just to make it awkward for everybody.
Yeah, see?
Oh, it would work. Did you see that picture of the D&D books I sent you?
Yeah, it was nice.
That was the one. That's the third edition set that's over at the Half Price Books.
Yeah, it looks like a damn near complete third edition hardcover set.
I know, seriously, including all the Forgotten Realms shit. I was like, I saw that. And if they weren't charging so goddamn much for it, it'd be a beautiful set to own. But no, thank you.
I'm good, man. I'm all in on the less books. Less is more is my recent. Recent thing. I like less books.
Well, I can tell you this, and I went over all of my second edition stuff when I was moving and cataloging it and looking up current prices. I don't want to say too much, but I think that my D&D collection is worth over $10,000, dude.
You should sell your D&D collection.
I mean, it's just going to go up the way I see it.
If these trends continue, disco is back, baby.
Mo, how do you like it? How do you like it? Mo.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I did want to, enough of the Warhammer stuff. I did want to talk about a game that is also coming back. Man, we were talking about Chronopia. One guy got really mad that we only talked about Chronopia for 5 minutes. And that dude, I think, was the creator of Chronopia.
I mean, he shouldn't be mad. We talked positively about it.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like, he only talked about it for five. Like,
Look, if we talked about the game and we were positive about it and didn't shit all over it, regardless of if we only talked about it 5 minutes or not, that's a glowing, classy endorsement.
I know, seriously. For people, long-term listeners will know that.
Yeah. If we don't shit all over the game, that's a huge endorsement.
Yeah, we don't shit all over it immediately. It's a huge endorsement. We talked about, you know, Kronopius coming back. And guess
it looks,
what?
It looks cool.
And guess what's coming back? Warzone now,
which I swear you sent me that Kickstarter link and I had like a mini like aneurysm whatever thing, like I swear that game with that name and those models already exists and was from a successful Kickstarter that already happened.
I think well that's different. Like I think that there's been multiple Warzone Kickstarters. I don't know if they've all delivered, so here it is. Mutant Chronicles Warzone Resurrection was a Kickstarter, that came out. So okay. that exists. That's from Protos. Protos did that one.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking of because it's the same models. It's the same.
No, these are very different models than the Protos one. Because the Protos had all redone models, so stuff had more of a realistic proportions on that one.
Okay.
I don't think that anybody has done an actual Warzone Kickstarter since the last time, but I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to like really dig into it.
Warzone one of those things where like a whole bunch of companies like can do stuff for it? Is that am I wrong? Is that what it is?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah. So yeah, Protos. Okay. So Warzone did have a comeback in 2014, and that was Protos also did that one. So they did Mutant Chronicles. Oh, no, maybe this is, yeah, 2014. That's what this was. Mutant Chronicles Warzone Resurrection. So this is a Warzone game that was redone. I don't know if it ever delivered. If someone pledged this, they can let us know. But all the models were redone.
Okay.
So now they're doing Warzone Eternal, which is by a different company. It's not by Protos anymore. How Protos gets away with making as many bad games as they do is beyond me. But this one is actually, this one's done by Res Nova. I don't know who they are. I've never heard of them before.
Sound Polish.
They're from Michigan. Mm-hmm. Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I see.
You know what? They got a lot of good stuff.
The plot thickens.
It's actually, you know, a good place that you could buy fudge from. You buy some fudge from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I'll say alcoholics. Is that what they got there?
Maybe. But it's already actually made its goal. It had a $50,000 goal. It's got 534 backers in like the first 5 days.
All right.
And what's it called? Hold on just 1 second. Okay. I had just had to save the previous half of the podcast, make sure I didn't accidentally delete it.
Ah, yes, that would have been quite a bungle.
Bungled. But the, yes, 64,534 backers, and it was in like the first 4 or 5 days, however long it was on there for. It really wasn't that much, that long. I don't know why I can't find it, but there's usually a, like, the person who's making this Kickstarter, you'd be able to click on it and see what other ones that they've done, but I don't see that on here. So that kind of worries me a little bit.
The little pictures you sent, it did look pretty appealing. It looked like they were going with a warband style where you only have like a few models and cards.
Yeah. They're definitely the models are not necessarily like they definitely feel like the older Warzone models, kind of like how the current, it looks like what the Kronopia one did. It's like the models
are real stylized. They have the soul of the old shitty models,
exactly. And there's one one of the characters, I think he's called either the I think he's the Centurion from the Chaos faction. I'm putting Chaos in quotation marks. But yes, he's got this Bruce Campbell chin, and I'm like, that definitely feels like the old school models.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So now, Steve, you know, for those who don't remember, Warzone was a 40K clone that came out in the 90s. It was very popular. I know a lot of people played it, but it kind of disappeared around the same time. Early 2000s, kind of when the market dried up for the first, it's like the first big mini gaming collapse.
I never played Warzone, but I did own and play the absolute shit out of Siege of the Citadel.
Yeah.
I played Siege of the Citadel a lot when I was a kid. I played that game a lot.
All right, so here we go, Steve. The worlds of our solar system ring with conflict. The rival mega corporations, Bauhaus, Capital, Cybertronic, Imperial, and Mashima, engage in an endless jockeying for power and territory, send their bravest and best to war in a futile effort to improve the bottom line. All while the true threat of all humanity grows in power, emerging from dark citadels, sprouting across the inner planets from the caverns of Mercury to the fertile lands of Mars. The extra-dimensional force of the Dark Legion scour the planets, their military might led by Algaroth, the Apostle of War. This is the time of the Second Corporate Wars, this time of Warzone Eternal.
It's the time of Warhammer 40,000! You know, there are no cool killer robots in Warzone.
There isn't.
They don't have a Terminator faction.
No, so just to keep it in mind, you get like the basic pledge, I guess, would be $105, and you get the Warzone Eternal rulebook, digital, and two of any Warzone Eternal unit. $125 gets you some more stuff, but like the big one is the $325 one, which kind of gets you everything. So Steve can finally play his Bauhaus army, which you always wanted to do.
Finally, jeez.
Bauhaus in the middle of our street.
Honestly, I never actually really wanted more out of that game than Siege of the Citadel. I fucking loved Siege of the Citadel. Like, it's cool. I'm down with Siege of the Citadel. I'd play Siege of the Citadel again.
Yes. So here we go. I pulled up the information on that I actually had bookmarked for this podcast. So Warzone. I know I forgot I had it, and then I was like, oh wait, I have stuff on this. 95 is when Warzone was released, based on Mutant Chronicles universe. The second edition was released in 98, then it died. Then the third edition came out in, it doesn't say, but it's called Ultimate Warzone came out, and it was, by that point, the license was with Excelsior Entertainment, which I think actually was maybe part of Target. I don't know.
Excelsior, true believers.
Then in 2014, Protoss did Warzone Resurrection. So now it's back in Warzone Eternal form. It's, you know, I who knows how it goes, but I think this is the perfect kind of format for the game. The models look decent. I like them. I think that there's some sexy paint jobs that can come out of it.
Yeah, they look appropriately goofy without looking stupid, is my opinion on those models.
They are very, very throwback.
Yeah, they're appropriately goofy, but they don't look stupid. I'm a fan of those. Like, if they had applied that same design sense to the new Hero Quest, I would have simped for that game super hard.
Yeah. But yeah, they I think actually, and this is weird because this is a Steve opinion that Joe is having, but I actually like the design of the Mashima the best.
Oh, they're cool looking. Yeah.
But it's very Steve to go with the Asian looking models as opposed to.
No, they have a cool. Else. They have a really cool looking stylized almost 18th century industrial look to them. They're cool. I like them a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
I normally don't like the generic, like, quote unquote, Asian designs or stuff. Like, I think the cafe army for Warhammer is shit. I think,
oh my God, I got to talk about that for a second.
I think the cafe army for Warhammer is shit. I think, most of the stuff from Clan War is shit. Like I have a very specific, like, level of, like, weeb stuff. I like if it's miniatures wise, like, especially miniatures wise, like, if something weeb is going to catch my eye, it has to be something like an army of, like, yokai or something like that, where it's like really, like, heavily mythological based. Cause, like, I don't know, like, samurai don't do it for me. Like, I think the cool samurai stuff is, like, Ronin stories. And
what's also true, you're not, yeah, you are not a big fan of the Tao either. So,
right, correct. Yeah, I don't like the towel. They're too boxy.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, I just, you know, I just wanted to make fun of you for being a weeb. So I just wanted to keep that out there. Keep that joke alive.
Sumimasen.
So anyway, for those who are interested, you could, it's still up. It's got like 2 weeks left on it, or 3 weeks at this point. 3 weeks still left on it. If you back it, let us know, because I would be interested in seeing what it's all about. I'm not like... I never really liked Warzone that much. I had some of the figures because I really liked the plastics that came in the core set that they did. I want to say it was Bauhaus versus Imperials, and the minis were super cool back in the day. Mm. They were all plastic, and I think you got like something like, I want to say it was like 40 or 60 minis in there. It was a huge army, but they were all just like the basic goons. It just looked really cool from what I remember. But I had that years and years and years ago. I think I bought it, ended up buying a box for cheap in like 04, 05 and something. I just had it. Okay. So I did want to talk about Warhammer Total War 3. Apparently the game is shit, Steve.
Really?
Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't. How is that possible?
So apparently, well, it's completely possible. It's a AAA game studio rushing their game out.
But I mean, it's like, it's the same game. Like what, like unless they tried to do like a Dawn of War 3, where like they made a new version of the game. Like, do you get what I'm going with? Like Total War 2 is extremely good because Total War 2 is just more content of Total War 1.
Yeah, so I don't think it's an engine problem from what I've been reading about it, because I read about this and I was like, wait, I didn't hear anything about this game being shit, and then all of a sudden people are all like, oh yeah, this game is shit, this shitty shit game is pure shit, it deserves to be in the shit box. That's what I call the toilet, the shit box.
I'm ready to hear the legend of the shit box.
The legend of the shit box. No, I mean, it's basically the game was rushed is basically what it is. So the game doesn't feel very good. It doesn't feel fun. It feels like a slog. And they were telling people like, the theory is that they were forced to put a bunch of shit into the game that they were like unprepared to do. But there's also like, I think there might be some of it that's like, well, I just want to shit on a game because that's what gamers do. So that might be part of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You never know. You can never really be sure if the Metacritic score is low because the game is bad, or because a bunch of fucking red faced incels are like, this game has a black person in it. Review bomb.
So, but apparently like the player base has shrunk considerably since release, but that always happens. But right. but even more so for a Total War game. It launched with mixed reviews and is now bottomed out as mostly negative reviews.
Okay.
Yeah. And apparently a bunch of people like the Total War community, from what I was reading, has all migrated back to Three Kingdoms. Dude, they want to get their Cathay fixed somewhere else, I guess. That's what it is. Right. Yeah, the... who knows, who cares that much. I think it is kind of a setback for something like Old World getting released, because I know a lot of the impetus behind Old World was definitely Total War.
Oh, absolutely.
But that doesn't mean anything, because Total War 2 is still super popular.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you don't like Total War 3, you can just get your Steam refund and play Total War 2.
Yeah. I mean, and it, whatever, it's, you could wait a little bit. I always wait on those games because you could usually get them on Steam sale for like 10 bucks each.
No, for sure. I mean, and no doubt, and absolutely no doubt that, you know, come a year from now, Total War 3 will be fixed. I mean, that's the thing, that like, it's more like new games just come out as shit, and like, you just wait until like they're fixed by someone, whether like dedicated modders or the devs actually fix it. Cause like, I mean, one of the biggest examples, you know, I mean, I think maybe the apex example is No Man's Sky. Like, you know, I'm sure you remember, like,
yeah, that game was lambasted at release.
Yes. And from what I understand, you know, very justifiably, but now that game, like right now, that game is very well worth playing, and it's really good. Like right now. So they did so much work. There's a huge, like, it absolutely has like, and its Metacritic score is really funny too, because it like, it actually has the turnaround. Like you can see like the initial where it was like 10 or whatever. Now it's like pushing 90. So like, yeah, they really turned it around with that game. So, yeah. but that seems to be like a really common occurrence now, especially, and like where it really shouldn't be is the AAA. Well, I guess it makes sense because the AAA studios are going to have the most crunch and promise the most features and deliver the most, you know, insert whatever. So it actually makes more sense that their game is going to come out less polished than indie games.
I mean, I thought about it was kind of more like, I was reading another article the other day where it was talking about, does Elden Ring have legs for staying power, right? I haven't played it. I don't know. Those games usually aren't my forte because I'm pretty, you know, I like to play games on easy mode so I can actually beat them. Yeah, I mean,
it's a single player. Elden Ring's the easiest Souls game. You'd be fine. Trust me. It's the easiest one.
But that's besides the point. What I actually was more of the comment of like, games have to last forever.
Yeah, that's not gonna. That's a single player game. There's no way.
That was the point that a lot of people were saying is like, it doesn't have to stay forever. It could have like an initial splash. People can play it, and then the bigger thing is that in 10 years, in 50, you know, when a lot of people may have forgotten about Elden Ring, all of a sudden it'll come back, and people will be like, hey, remember this le gem of a game? And they'll be like, oh shit, Elden Ring, it's great. And then a whole new crop of gamers will discover it and play through it.
Right. I mean, that game, it's, you know, it's whatever, 50 hours is like the average playtime to complete. So like, yeah, you're going to have a huge drop in player base once the majority of your players have, you know, put in their requisite 50 hours to complete the game.
Or 120 hours in case of me.
Sure. I mean, that's fine and valid too. What I'm saying is like, people will generally stop playing a single player game when they complete it. The only longevity that the Souls games have ever had, and is like from top to bottom, has always been based around enthusiasts doing weird like PvP fight clubs. Like that was like there's still people who do that now for the original Dark Souls. Like the only reason that game has like a lot of concurrent players at any time is because there's people who are doing like, you know, player versus player builds. That's really all it is. Cause you know, it's a single player game. It's like you complete it. It has an A point and a B point. I mean, maybe you want to play through, I think Dark Souls only has, no, Dark Souls has two endings. So like maybe you play through it twice to get the second ending. You know, like, I mean, and I'd say like, you know, if the, like strictly like one level above like your standard player might play these games each twice to see the other ending. Mm. That's kind of it. Like that's really all there is to it. And that's fine though. Like that's okay. Single player games are allowed to fucking exist.
Yeah, exactly. I want to say that I did pull up the thing on Res Nova, the guys who are doing Warzone. They have not created any other game. However, I do know the guy who created the game. I know I have interacted with him in the past. He is a local gamer, actually, not super local. He's local,
a regional local.
Yeah, he's a regional loco. You know, like a Adepticon player guy.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's definitely interesting to I don't know if I should give out his name, but I mean, it's on the thing. But anyway, I know like you could, I looked at his Facebook portal and I was like, oh, he knows literally everyone I know. yeah. So it's definitely interesting. I on that one. And the other guy who was working on it, I have no idea who he is. He seems to be more of an enigma than anything. But yes, yeah, so yes, Total War 3 will probably be fixed in about a year, and then we people will be like, this game is the greatest game I've ever fucking played.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's just it. Like, it's simple as that. I mean, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, and the you know, I love the fact that my modder, who's been doing in the past, has pulled all sorts of shit from Total War and made them into actually printable models for 3G. has done it once again with Total War 3. So I'm super excited about that.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I sent you some of it, right? Like what you've done?
Yeah, it all looks great.
Yeah, his fucking designs on the Bloodthirster, not a Bloodthirster, on Bellicor are fucking insanely cool. Like it is the best it's better than I think the plastic Bellicor that GW produced.
Which is, I mean, that plastic Bellicor is really nice.
Yeah, and the and his Bloodthirsters are also super nice. Like I'm it's kind of like, oh shit, you really don't need to buy any Bloodthirsters. Well, the blood, so the Hounds of Khorne, Khorne Hounds, they look really authentic. The blood letters are not. I don't think they're really good one for ones of the GW stuff. I think that they actually kind of look a little bit better, but you know, they're not like, but as I say, they're not one for one. You're not going to get like, you couldn't plop those on the table and pretend like they're actual blood letters. Like your local Games Workshop store manager would come up and say, excuse me, you can't play with those in this store. And you'd be like, shut up, nerd, and push them down. Push them down. That's the two type of store managers. You could push them down easily and say, shut up, nerd. Or you could say, I'm going to take your insulin. And they'll be like, no. So, well, I'm going to get in trouble for that comment, but whatever.
Yeah, probably.
But the Bloodthirsters look nearly identical. So I'm actually hoping that he actually does some of the stuff for Slaanesh or Nurgle or Tzeentch, because I'd be super excited to see those. He may be working on them currently. I don't know, but if you're listening to this, you know who you are, please do at least the Slaaneshies. I would be super excited to see those. But aside from that, Steve, do we have any other news?
There's a ton of like RPG stuff dropping.
Oh, what's
that? Just like in general, like there's just a lot of like RPG stuff coming out. Like there's Dragon Shield unveiled. They're doing role-playing container accessories, or container, maybe not right. But they have like a GM kit, and the GM kit, so it's like a giant Dragon Shield deck box. So it's made of that nice, like hard, like leatherette deck box material. It's magnetically sealed. The top thing is pluck foam for minis. Accessories or whatever.
What's this called? Like
underneath that, it's if you look up Dragon Shield role playing, Dragon space Shield, and then space one word role playing, it should bring you to the accessories page on their main site. To take a look. So the top is pluck foam for minis, and then also this is the thing I think is the most clever part. The lid for your container, your box, the magnetic lid, is actually a DM screen. So when you open it up and set the lid down, the lid is your screen with pockets for you to put stuff in. There are dry erase cards.
Oh, this thing's kind of cool looking.
Right? There's dry erase cards that have spots on the top of the DM screen for you to slide in the dry erase cards. So you can put in like NPCs the players are talking to, or like a list, like initiative order, stuff like that. So things that the players can see. There's just tons of like little like gigas and whiz bangs in this set. And then on the player side, they have this big container that has a row for like your dice, pencils, accessories, kind of thing, your player character.
Oh, mini. That is nice. That is super fucking nice.
Right? That's what I'm saying. And then it has space to store a book, and it's also a dice tray, and then place to put your character sheet and all that stuff.
Well, that's the nice thing is it's got the built-in dice tray to it with the character sheet slot right there. That's really nice.
Yes, it's super nice, and it has a dry erase thing, so you can actually put your sheet under it, and you can write like to do, you know, so you're not constantly erasing and rewriting your HP and stuff. You just use your dry erase marker.
That holy shit, that is probably the best accessory I've seen in a long time for D&D.
Yeah. So like,
you know what it needs though?
They're super nice.
The player one needs to have in one of those little slots, like it's got these side slots on it. I'm looking at it right now where it's got like where you can put your dice and your pencils and everything else in there. It needs to have one that has a little piece of foam in it that you could just put your character model in.
Right. Yes.
So when
you're bringing
Elfgore, the dragonkin with the big, you know, with the big dong, you can easily slide him into that spot.
True. True. Yeah. That is the only thing I would say it's missing.
Yeah, and you could easily cut a piece of foam and put it in there, but I'm just saying, like, if you're paying, well, it says on the 65 pounds, so that's sure.
Yeah, it's like 70 bucks. Yeah, it's like, I think the player ones end up being 70. I think the player ones are going to be 75, and then the DM one's going to be like 100 something.
Oh, that's euros. I'm looking at euros, not pounds. Okay, so in total, euros. So yeah, it would be about 75 bucks.
Yeah, so like they're a little expensive, but they seem they're expensive, but they don't seem overpriced.
No, not for what you're getting. Like it's very nice, I think. I don't see that being I think that's an appropriate price for that. It's a little pricey, but it's not. I don't think it's not worth it for that price.
Right. That's to say, it's like, it's exactly how I felt. I was like, well, that's expensive, but it doesn't seem overpriced because what you're getting seems really sick.
The DM one is a little pricey, but I think that's because you have the actual spots for the miniatures. My only problem with that is I don't think a lot of DMs are currently using miniatures on the regular anymore, but that's different. I know, like most DMs I know are talk about using miniatures, but that, like, that's their pipe dream, is like they hope to have at some point a giant miniature game someday.
So now to keep going on the accessories front, there's these DM focused things from Wizards of the Coast specifically called campaign cases. And there's two of them. I think they're just called the campaign case. I think that's the full name of the item, so to speak. And what they are is there's two. There's one that's called the monster campaign case, and the other that's terrain campaign case. So the monster one, I think these are the coolest. They're definitely the coolest Wizards of the Coast produced D&D accessories ever made. The monster one is it's a box. It's magnetically sealed. It has a handle, so everything is stored inside the box. And what is inside the box is there's a whole bunch of discs, just a shit ton of these plastic discs. There's four different colors spread across multiple sizes. So there's medium, large, and huge. You know, the sizes in D&D. In addition to those discs, there are these sheets, and the sheets have color forms on them. And the color forms are enemies, NPCs, players, so like goblins, dragons, whatever. And like as the DM, you pull out your sheet, stick your color forms on the discs, and then bam, there you go. You've got whatever monsters you need for the campaign. And when you're done, you just peel the color form right off the disc and put it back on the sheet.
Oh, they're reusable.
They're reusable.
That's interesting. I like that.
The other one, yeah, which is this one's even better than that.
The terrain case. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I'm a big fan of the monster one because I'm a huge fan of like the quick and dirty like 2D models. I think that's the best thing to use for campaigns, honestly. But the big one is that terrain one, and the terrain one's huge. So the terrain one, same deal. It's a portable box that magnetically seals, and inside that one there are flat dungeon tiles that are like kind of like a big surface area one. But then there are also interlocking dungeon tiles that have lots of different variety on them.
They look identical to the ones that WotC released for the Dungeon Crawl 4th edition box sets.
Yes,
and the Wrath of Ashardalon.
And these have many improvements over those due to the like what's on them, the design, the way they're put together, and also the material coding, because the other thing that comes in this campaign case are more color forms. Rain color forms. So you have stuff like traps, doors, debris, tables, chairs, all that stuff that's normally like a big hassle to mess, especially if you're doing models. Oh my God. I saw someone try and set up a table with like actual terrain features for like doors and tables and stuff. And like, while admittedly it looks very cool, what a pain in the fucking ass to deal with. So being able to actually like bust out terrain rapidly like that and be like, yeah, here's a door. Boom. Just slap it on the board, and it's not going to get knocked over. Your alignment.
Slap it.
Slap it on there. And of course,
spend so much time thinking about if you could, you didn't think if you should, Steve.
Then you just, and then when you're done, you peel it right off your tile, stick it back on the sheet. Bam. There you go. Done. So super sick. A couple of amazing pieces of RPG accessory there. And they're both, I think, $65 MSRP. So they're both a very reasonable price.
Yeah, those are actually pretty decent deals. If you're doing DM stuff with miniatures heavy, I think that's a pretty decent thing. But I also think investing in the Pathfinder punch out minis is a good deal too, because those are fairly cheap. You can find those pretty cheap.
Yeah, those are also good. And I mean, like the winner between the two is definitely the terrain case, but I do like the monster case as well. But but if you were to say pick one, I would absolutely pick the terrain case, no question. It's a no-brainer.
So, I also think that based on our conversations we've had before, what the ideal situation would be is theater of the mind for the majority of the game. But I think if you want to do minis, what you do is you just basically get the room that you're fighting in, you set that up, and then you have the minis on that board just to kind of give an idea of where everyone's at and what everyone's doing at the time.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, you're talking like you need the squares if you're running fifth edition, or if you're running third edition or newer, you got to have the squares.
Yeah. Well, you don't need it if you're running fifth. You could. You don't need it.
I believe that you are objectively correct and also objectively incorrect, based entirely upon what character classes are being used in your game.
Okay, I could see that. Yes, I will give you that. All right.
That's the case. And then the last D&D thing is they're doing a brand new starter set. The Stormwreck Isle. It's a new D&D starter set. And you know what the Stormwreck Isle is, Joe?
Is it kind of like where they had fire, the fire festival?
No. Okay. It's the motherfucking cartoon. So WizKids is doing the minis. They have the set, like the shitty green wizard and the cavalier, the acrobat.
Cavalier, acrobat.
Yeah. So like legit, they are doing.
Oh yeah, they're totally on the front of the cover for it. Yeah, you can totally see the acrobat on the cover. That's funny.
Yes. So that's the new setting for the starter. I think that's going to be hugely successful and hugely popular. And it's about time they retired the old starter set, because that adventure was fucking garbage.
Yeah, the Minds of Phandelver is not a bad starter. I actually think it's a pretty good. I think the initial encounter with the goblins is fantastic. It's a fantastic starter for the game.
Let's just say it's old.
It is very, very old at this point. And yes, they do need a new starter. But anyway, so we got 3 minutes left in this recording session, so let's end it here. Unless there's anything crazy you got to talk about.
No, I wanted to hit those accessories, because I think they were the things that like they were the most recent things in gaming that actually got me excited.
Wow, Steve, you came to the table to play this cast. I haven't seen you do that in a while.
I mean, you know why? It's because nothing has come out that's gotten me excited.
Well, these definitely got you excited. So go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can get in contact with us, talk with us, make jokes with us, sit underneath the covers and eat some popcorn while we're watching Top Gun Maverick. You could also follow me, Joe, on Instagram at Game Classy Joe. Once again, everything for me is on hold until I move. So you probably won't hear anything from me online until like mid-July. You could follow Steve on Twitter, where he posts lots and lots of anime stuff, like and not appropriate for work anime stuff.
My Twitter is work safe.
Is it okay? So it's command_throw for his work safe Twitter.
Yes, and it is work safe. I do not RT assholes onto my timeline.
And so I also wanted to give a spoiler for Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers at the end of this cast. So spoilers. If you don't want the spoilers, you can turn it off here. But 1, 2, 3. So guess who makes an appearance in the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie, Steve?
Is it Ugly Sonic?
Yes, Ugly Sonic makes his appearance.
Yes.
Did you hear about that?
I heard it was all over the place.
It's fucking hysterical because it's Tim Robbins from I Think You Should Leave, if you haven't watched that on Netflix, you really should, because it's a fucking fantastic show. But yeah, it's definitely Ugly Sonic is in the chat. I lost my shit at that. I was like, no, like this is a reference that is like trapped in a time bubble. Like really is. Like no one's gonna get this reference.
It's very funny though.
Yes. All right, Steve. Until next time.
DC can't do masturbation. Neil Gaiman was once told that he couldn't mention masturbation in Sandman as, quote, people do not masturbate in the DC universe, end quote. His reaction was that, quote, explains a lot, end quote, about the DC universe.
Game Classy.